League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Porky, we've reached already number 16.
We certainly have.
In the number of podcasts that we've done on the record. And that means 16 weeks have passed.
That's right.
Since we started telling these stories.
Well, 15 actually, because we didn't have a 13.
That's true.
Yes.
People will get confused though if you start saying,
we won't say
15,
that.
16, 13.
No, I'm not saying that. Not saying
what
that.
It means is that basically it's been going for about 4 months, isn't it?
Indeed.
Maybe three and a half.
Absolutely, yeah.
But anyway, people are finding them very popular.
Yeah.
You can, of course, find them on the record, on the Twitter account on the record, which is where you probably have found them.
Yes.
Today we should talk a little bit more about not so much our American career, but our sort of Fleet Street career.
Well, that's right. Mm. And I think we should also focus because, you know, we have met so many people along the way. The characters we remember in Fleet Street, okay?
Yeah, absolutely right.
You know, you just told me that a mutual friend remembered Michael O'Flaherty.
Well, not so much a mutual friend. Somebody on Twitter who heard us talking about Michael O'Flaherty, who, of course, is the guy who ended up going and living in a mud hut in Africa.
That's right. He married an African princess.
He did, but along the way, he had been involved with various women.
Oh, yeah.
And he lived in Kent, and this guy knew him from his home in Kent. He wasn't a journalist.
No.
He just happened to know him because he was quite a character in the the pub that he went to.
Mike was so charismatic. Mm. He was of Irish origin, so always loved getting over to Ireland.
Yeah.
I'd see him in Dublin hotels sometimes. He's a prolific drinker when he was drinking, but he had bouts of sort of sobriety.
Mm.
He'd go for months, if not years, you know, not
drinking.
Well,
when I met him, he wasn't drinking.
No,
he'd stopped altogether.
Yeah, well, he had periods like that. One time he was such an inherent drinker that he deliberately dated a nurse because she had access to drugs in a medical centre.
I think you've mentioned that when we talked about him last time.
And what they used to do is you used to meet in a pub car park where she would then inject him with some drug which helped to bolster his liver against the huge quantities of alcohol he was drinking. And then they'd go out for the night and get completely bladderated, you know?
Extraordinary.
Yeah.
Well, there were quite a few characters. I mean, there was one particular guy I remember who was on the night news desk of The Sun.
Yes.
And he had managed over the years to work quite a sort of tidy little number, because basically what he did was he'd created a whole series of sort of shell, not just shell companies, but shell individuals, right? And because when you're in charge of a news desk, you're able to make payments to people, albeit quite small
ones. Yes, that's right,
And this went on for years and years and years and years.
Yeah.
It'd be 10 quid here for a tip or 25 quid there for a story.
Yeah.
And all of these people didn't exist, right? Mm. But what he did was he managed to make these people receive payments.
Yeah.
And all the bank accounts in the end were linked to his bank account.
That's right.
And so he made himself quite a pretty penny until he was discovered having done it when he was finally fired. But they didn't go after him for the money, funnily enough.
Well, it happened to another colleague at the People.
That's
and
right.
And he accumulated over £250,000.
Yeah.
And
he did have to pay it back, though, I think, didn't he?
No, I think he also went to jail.
Yeah.
And that wasn't a series of accounts. He actually established with headed notepaper an organisation that looked like a big press agency, but it was his wife's.
Yes.
And he was
this went on quite a lot, didn't it?
Oh, it went on all over the place. Well, I mean, you and I could easily have done it. I think my budget when I was the news editor over 5 or 6 consecutive years was probably about £2 or 3 million a year.
Yeah, easily, yeah.
If I'd have skimmed off 10%, I'd be a wealthy man.
Well, it's like the old trick that they say if a bank is deciding to embezzle from you, they don't take out hundreds of pounds at a time. They take out a penny every single day that you've had the bank account. So by the time you've done that for about 40 years, they've actually taken quite a lot of money off you.
Sure.
But the place was full, was it not, of people who were at it in one way or another.
Oh, yeah.
Because the profligate way that papers were run in those days meant that nobody really checked very much.
No.
And it was only really in our sort of latter times, yes. I suppose you would say,
yes.
that they started to get a bit more tight on the way that the places were run.
But the thing is, there was a dual economy in newspapers in the early days. You got your salary on, like, day one of the month, and then halfway through the month, you got your expenses if you could be bothered to do them.
Yeah.
And most people couldn't. They just kept drawing money from the cash office.
But that's what I was going to say. The other way of doing it, of course, was the, you know, drawing the advance.
That's right.
Which you then had to account for sometime down the road.
That, well, yeah, but they never did. But, I mean, I remember the, you know, the very first time I submitted my expenses in Manchester, the Express, I was told, this is always an apocryphal story, but it's actually true, to come back to the desk and double them, because if you didn't, everybody else in the room would suffer, because the management would say, well, if he can exist on 60 quid a week, I think that's what I claimed, why can't the rest? Why are they claiming 120? And that was where I used to go. But a friend of mine, Johnny Jinks, who was the news editor of the Express before me, actually, and then he went on to become the night news editor of the Times. I mean, I remember him literally pouring out a bag of receipts all over the floor of his house.
Right.
And he had to catch up on 3 years' expenses because he'd just been drawing money from the cash office every week. And they said to him, unless you produce documents for this, you're going to have to pay it all back. And it ran into 20,000.
Yeah. So he had to find the documents and presumably did find the documents.
Well, he had them all in a bag somewhere, you know, and he spent weeks trying to put it together. It was a nightmare.
It was a great discipline, actually, to do the expenses, because as they got tighter and tighter on them. Yeah. And before, of course, nowadays, it would be a nightmare, because nowadays you have what can only be described as computerised receipts, right?
That's right.
Where everything is printed out.
That's right.
And it also fades after a while.
It does.
So I don't know how they do it nowadays,
no.
but certainly in our day, what you would have in a restaurant, for example, was a little white bit that you tore off the bottom.
Yes, that's right.
Which you would sometimes fill out on your own after they'd had the bill paid.
Well, that was in America when you got the white bill.
Well, it was also in this country
as well. I didn't really notice it
in this country. Well, there was a terrible, terrible story about a guy whose name I now forget, who worked for the Daily Express, and his career hadn't gone well from the start,
right?
Because he was called down from, I think, the Yorkshire Post or something like that, to be interviewed, right?
Yeah,
by the deputy editor of the Express, as a man you know well.
Who was that?
It was Paul Potts.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And this guy was appointed, right? Mm. And the first day he was at work, the editor walked past him,
yes,
and called in the news editor and said, "Who's that guy sitting over there?"
Yeah,
in the new medical correspondent's chair.
Yeah,
to which he was told the name, and he said, "That's not the guy that I hired."
Mm.
And they went, "Really? We thought that was the guy you wanted." It turned out that the editor had wanted somebody completely different.
Right.
But this guy had somehow got the job.
Right.
And nobody was quite sure. And he wasn't particularly good.
No.
But he never quite fitted into the Fleet Street sort of way of things.
Vernacular.
You know? Yeah, well, you know how some of the guys that would come from the provinces didn't quite get
it. They didn't quite get it.
You know, he didn't go out drinking very much.
No.
You know, he sort of slaved away, worked all hours of the day and night.
No,
and never really got any stories.
No, I totally agree.
He was eventually handed a story, right, on a plate, and it went very well. And it was an interview, I think, with Lord Winston, you know, the famous
the
surgeon.
Medical guy,
And so turned into a splash. I can't remember what the story was.
Mm.
Anyway, the deputy editor came out and said to him, you know, "That was a fantastic piece of work. You know, go and enjoy yourself and take your wife out for dinner and charge the company."
Yes.
So he said, "Well, this is a great idea, right?" Now, he must have then talked to somebody who wasn't really very helpful to him because he submitted his expenses for that dinner. And unfortunately for him, he filled out his expenses form.
Yeah.
Saying that he was entertaining Lord Winston rather than entertaining his own wife.
Yes.
And he also, unfortunately for him, added a one to the...
to the £42 bill.
To the £42 bill.
Yeah.
So it read £142.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which for a curry house in sort of Hendon...
That's right.
...wasn't really very likely.
No, and it didn't add up when, you know, the chicken, whatever it was, the party, was only £12. Where did the extra £100
come
from?
He'd only torn off the bottom bit, but he hadn't done it with any great sort of skill.
No.
So any idiot could see that he'd added the one in, right?
Yeah.
To make matters even worse, a guy called Andrew Cameron, who you might remember was the sort
Chief Executive,
happened to have asked for a series of some expenses just to kind of look over them because that's what we used to do from time to time. Found this one, looked at it and thought, "This doesn't look right." Then checked the date, discovered that he in fact was entertaining Lord Winston that very night at his house.
What, the very same man?
The very same
man. Yeah.
So I mean, this guy's luck was just all over the place.
It was,
right?
Yeah.
And he got fired.
Yeah.
You
know, because he tried
to embezzle the company.
It's embezzlement. I got the famous one from John Toomey, our crime correspondent.
Yes.
Because John was always mixing with cops.
Yeah.
And he looked like a cop, he thought like a cop, he acted like a cop, and he drank like a cop.
Mm.
And he, in complete straight-faced fashion, because this was John was, he submitted a bill for his expenses, and it went, you know, two pints of bitter,
right.
two pints of bitter,
yeah.
four large gin and tonics,
yeah.
two brandies, two Southern Comforts,
yeah.
Two Courvoisier, one cheese sandwich.
Yes,
that was his. That was it, and
right.
it came up to £111.
Right.
And the cheese sandwich was £4.50.
Yeah.
And quite straight facedly, John said, "You know, well, that, I'm being honest. That's
it probably was what they had.
What,
right?
Exactly what our lunch was all about." Yeah. I said, "Who had the one cheese sandwich?" He said, "The cop." He said, "I never eat," and John never did eat.
No.
You know, he never did eat.
Although he wasn't particularly slim.
No, he wasn't slim, John. No,
he was quite a florid guy, wasn't he?
I sent him once. John came in with great crime stories all the time.
Yeah.
So I want to, and he was a big rugby fan.
Mm.
So I want to. England were playing France in Paris.
Yeah.
And the sports desk, run by our colleague David Emery, said, "Listen, I've got a couple of tickets for the Paris game. If any of you boys want it," he said, "all my lads are going there to report, but we've got a couple of spare tickets." I said, "Okay. John, do you want to go to Paris?" He said, "Oh, I'd love to. It'd be great." I said, "Okay, well, look, here's the tickets. They're from the sports desk. You're going with a mate. Tell your mate to pay for his airfare. I'll pay yours."
Mm.
"Oh, okay, yeah, on the company, you know, because he's done very well."
Yeah.
The problem was, when he on the way back, John got a little bit excited about the free champagne he got in club class, because we got him upgraded.
Yes.
Excuse me, I'm joking now. And when he asked for one of those miniature bottles of champagne on the way back from Paris to London...
Split.
Yeah, they said they'd run out.
Right.
So he got massively aggressive.
Mm.
You know, I don't travel in club class because I want you to tell me there's no champagne.
Right.
I want my champagne. You won't get me out of this seat when we get to London. Let's have another champagne.
Right.
All aggressive. Unfortunately,
which is very unlike him, actually.
Very unlike him. And unfortunately, on landing,
right.
you know...
Was he cuffed?
Well, I'm not sure if he was cuffed or not, but I'm afraid it involved a court appearance at some stage.
Oh, dear.
And,
I'm surprised he didn't have friends in the force that could have forgotten
I think
about
it's different in airports and all that because of security and all that kind of stuff. But he was a great guy, John. Still is.
Mm.
Still doing it.
Yeah, there was a terrible story as well about a guy who, and I don't want to be too anonymous here, but some form of stories that we have, you can't really give away the name. Because there was a terrible story, I remember, about there was a company that used to take photographs at the airport.
Yes.
And that was all they did.
Yes.
You know, it was like a picture agency, right?
There's a guy called Barry.
I think it might have been him, but I'm not sure if this story is actually about him.
Yes.
Or somebody that worked for him.
Yeah, they were the ones who could go airside. They had an agreement. Yeah.
They had an agreement. And if anyone like Joan Collins was arriving, they'd get the picture, you know, and everything that happened within the environs of the airport was theirs, basically.
Right.
But there was one terrible story, which I don't know whether you've heard, of a guy who was at had quite a long day, was now relaxing in one of the airport bars, this side, not airside.
Yes.
And a very beautiful a woman appeared who started sort of chatting him up, and they spent a couple of hours together.
Yeah.
And eventually, you know, things, one thing led to another, and he disappeared off into a hotel with her.
Yeah.
And thought his luck could, you know, come in.
You just met her, did he?
Yeah, it was one of these.
Was she a traveller, a passenger?
She was some kind of a passenger or something like that, yeah. And basically they had just got on very well.
Yeah.
You know, it does happen.
Mm.
And off they'd gone to a hotel room.
Mm.
Now, supposedly, according to the way the story was told to me, they then got themselves involved in a few kind of sex games, you know, things which you might consider to be a little bit kinky.
Yeah.
Involved
tying people up.
Which involved tying people up. First of all, he tied her up because that was what she'd asked him to do.
Yeah.
And then when that was all done, over and done with, she then said, "I'm going to tie you up now."
Yeah.
And he said, "Fine."
Mm.
And so she tied him up face down on the bed.
Yeah.
Which was all fine until she then left the room and somebody else came into the room who had completely different ideas and was not, in fact, a woman.
Oh, dear.
If you can understand sort of where this is going.
Oh, my God.
And he was unfortunately assaulted rather badly.
And
couldn't tell
that's
anyone.
A terrible story.
Well, he couldn't tell anybody about it because of the shame, apart from the else.
Mm.
But he ended up having to somehow get one of his colleagues to come and rescue him.
Oh, God.
Because they just left him there.
Yeah, well, I mean, how did he get to his phone and all that crap?
Well, I think he managed to reach the phone in the room. Because, you know, I mean, you end up having to do all sorts of things.
Yeah,
there were some terrible things that happened to people.
It definitely wasn't Barry, I'll tell you that.
No, I'm sure it wasn't.
One, as we're talking about Fleet Street colleagues, one colleague, he was a very unfortunate colleague, actually. It was a guy called Colin Bell.
Oh, yeah.
And Colin was a smashing lad. He came down from Scotland, but he made the mistake of believing what the news editor was a Scottish guy called Ollis Ryan.
Oh, yes.
And Ollis said he was going to stock the newsroom with tough guys from Glasgow and show us all how to perform as reporters,
right.
you know.
Yeah.
Get out there and
take
show...
Take no nonsense.
Take no nonsense. Get out there and, you know, tell them who runs the world tell those Daily Mail people that we're on top now. You're Ollis Ryan's boys and all that. So he brings this guy down called Colin Bell, who was about as soft as putty, but walked in on day one in a black leather overcoat and dark glasses on, on in November.
Yeah.
And just, you know, just swayed into the room and did a kind of, you know, I'm taking that desk, you know, threw his bag on it, you know, took his coat off, still had his dark glasses on. Everybody thought, you know, who's this jerk? You know what I mean? And, you know, when somebody called his bluff, you know, he backed down immediately and all that kind of stuff. So, but what we, well, I became a good friend of his and we used to socialise a lot at weekends because both our girlfriends knew each other. And he always liked drinking a lot. But the problem was he was in the throes of becoming an alcoholic.
Yeah.
And eventually he did.
Right.
And he
drank. Well, there must have been so many people that we knew that became alcoholics.
Cole drank himself to death and it was tragic. He was a very good looking boy. Right, he didn't have any problem attracting women and all that kind of stuff. He was quite charming until he had a drink. Then he became quite aggressive and he lost control of himself. And the time I realised it was all over was at Heysel, the day after the stadium disaster. And I was still a reporter, but there were so many reporters there, somebody had to take control of the Express team. So I rang up the news desk and said, look, I'm volunteering to take over here. I said, because there's seven of us. We've come from all different parts of England.
And you need a bit of direction.
Yeah, and I said, you tell me now and I'll do it. Because I didn't mind authority.
No.
So they said, yeah, OK, do it. They took the pressure off them. Because there were no mobile phones, so you couldn't reach people individually.
And also a lot of reporters, and you'll know this from becoming a news desk hand and news editor eventually, a lot of reporters don't want to be in charge.
No, they don't.
They're much happier being told, go and do that over there.
Yeah.
And when you've done that, you come back and we'll do something else.
That's right. So I got them all in the hotel lobby, and it was in the bar. And I noticed that while everybody else was just having a bit of breakfast, Cole was having a coffee with a brandy.
Right.
This is about sort of, you know, 8:30 or something like that. So I said, look, what I suggest we do is, look, fellas, sorry, but the news desk has just been on. They've asked me to organise. So I didn't say I was in charge. I said, so look, let me suggest this. If anybody wants to suggest another plan, that's fine.
You were quite tactful then.
I was quite tactful,
But
as you suggested, you know, nobody else wanted to take control anyway.
Yeah.
So I said, right, well, you go to the hospital, you go to the police, you go to the stadium, you go and track down the two families we know are here and all that kind of stuff, you know, fine. So we all went off and I said, let's rendezvous back here at 4 o'clock, see what we've got and we'll decide what the best line is. So we got back about 4:30. It's file until 6:30 in those days, you know, for the first edition.
Yeah.
And Colin was still sitting at the bar on about
from breakfast
on about his 15th coffee and brandy.
Yeah.
Out of his face, falling all over the place, couldn't remember why he was there.
Yeah.
I said, have you done your job? Have you? I gave it to a freelancer. You know, it was all over. That's when I realised this was a hopeless case. And sadly, last report I had of him was trying to get some work in Scotland because his family came from there when he was walking around with one of those cheap plastic briefcases which were thin plastic, thin bubbly plastic.
Yeah, those kind of attaché cases.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. And the only thing in it was a very old bottle of Iron Brew, which didn't have Iron Brew in it, had whiskey in it.
Yeah.
And every 15 minutes on the dot, he would disappear to the men's loo with his briefcase.
Yeah.
For a swig of whiskey.
Oh dear.
He was a hopeless case.
Yeah.
And the last report I had was from our friend Terry Manners, who was up in Scotland, the Scottish editor.
Yeah.
He said it was like looking at an AIDS victim.
Yeah.
His liver was that rattled. And it was very, very sad.
Yeah,
very
shame.
Sad. Yeah.
Talking of sort of real characters in Fleet Street, you'd have to name Ross Benson.
Yeah, you would,
as
yeah.
one, wouldn't
Loved
you?
Ross a bit.
Ross
a
Benson,
great guy.
Brilliant guy.
Yeah.
Was a royal correspondent in various the disguises. He was very brave, actually. He went into Afghanistan when it was a very dangerous part of the world.
He went into
dressed
Iraq.
As a Mujahideen.
He did with Danny, what's his name?
John Downing. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's also terribly charming, very dashing. We've told stories about him before that he used to hang around with George Best.
That's right.
He's got a tramp all the time.
That's right.
Very tall. Always had at least two or three women on the go.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Was an amazing bloke to just have a drink with.
He was
one of the first people that I'd met. I think I'd met him in New York, but when I came back to work at the Express, terribly proud to know him. Really,
that's right.
Because he was such a sort of force of
enigmatic.
Nature,
enigmatic
force of life. You know,
he was,
great writer as well.
Yeah,
wasn't he
was terrific, and he was a very, very brave man.
Yeah,
he put over this attitude all the time that you know, I can't be bothered, and you know, isn't it all a bore?
Yeah.
Isn't it all too tiresome? But he was incredibly good at his job. He was a great writer. He was a thoroughly good journalist. And
mischievous as well.
Mischievous, very, very mischievous. Always broke, by the way.
Yes.
He was always broke because he was always paying off alimony to women.
Well, he was
and
either paying
kind of
off
stuff.
Alimony or, I mean, somebody once said of him, when he finally does pass on, there'll be an awful lot of ladies in dark glasses at the back of the church.
Yeah, that's right,
Because there were women in love with him all over the world.
That's right, including Joan Collins.
Yeah.
because he used to see her in California when he worked out there as the LA correspondent. Yeah. And famously, he met her in a restaurant once, and she went up to speak to him, and he said, "Joan, don't you know that I never talk to actresses on my day off?" You know, and this kind of stuff. So I don't know whether, you know, how well they knew each other, but his last job before he died was in Iraq.
Yes.
And it was when Iraq was still run by Hussein. It was a very dangerous place for foreign correspondents. Mm. And he wrote scintillating reports of noises in the night outside his room and mysterious phone calls from people telling him to get out of town and all this kind of thing. Very, very brave man.
I remember seeing him latterly when he ended up moving across the Daily Mail. A lot of people did.
Yes.
When the Express kind of became...
Well, he was working for the Mail during these. Yes. And I wrote a letter to his editor, Paul Dacre, after he died, saying that was the bravest report and dispatches I've ever seen.
Right.
And Paul wrote back saying, "I'll pass this on to his widow."
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, one of the things that was kind of tragic in a way, but it wasn't, because he was still Ross Benson.
Yeah.
I was in the new Daily Mail building over in Kensington, working, doing some stuff over there.
Mm.
And I saw him on the escalator coming down. As I was also about to go down, I was like, "Oh, Ross, where are you going? Which pub?"
Mm.
He's like, "Oh, we don't go out anymore."
Mm.
And I said, "Really?"
Mm.
"What do you mean, don't go?" He said, "No, it doesn't really happen here.
Mm.
It's not really, it's rather frowned upon."
Yeah.
And he went and he walked into the canteen, got himself some lunch, and went and sat down and started eating it.
Yeah.
And I thought the days of, you know, the dandy Fleet of Fleet Street
gone,
have finally gone.
Yeah.
You know, well, shocking.
I liked him because when I first got to America, he was the West Coast correspondent for The Express, and I'd just been appointed to New York.
Yeah.
But he was over in New York, and he was just terribly helpful.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't have any
side
to him at all.
He had no airs and graces. And I always loved the fact that he wore these incredible clothes where he opened up his blazer and it would have one of those incredible sort of linings.
Monogrammed.
That would either have been monogrammed or...
Right,
I mean, incredibly stylish man.
Yeah, he was.
And the like of which you really don't see anymore.
No, you don't, no. He was a great guy. I loved him. And get him on his own, as you quite rightly say. This is some of the stories you tell you about George Best and all that kind of stuff. He was a terrific guy.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
And we should talk about as well another guy, just while we've got probably a couple more minutes left.
Yeah.
The Duke, Chris Djukanovic.
Oh, terrific guy.
The picture editor of The Express,
terrific
whose father
guy.
Was, I believe, a Croatian refugee war hero
That's
type
right,
guy,
yeah.
but came to Britain and started working as a photographer.
Yes.
And was a very famous photographer
was,
in his own right.
He was.
And his son, Chris Djukanovic, who I believe now lives in Australia.
He does. He married an Australian girl.
Yeah.
And went back to Australia.
And he ended up going back there. Was a wonderful man.
Yeah.
And a terrible drinker as well. But I mean, I'm not saying that in a bad way.
No, he was a great drinker. He was a very compassionate guy, Chris. What used to happen was he had a very ambitious deputy, right? Mm. A guy called John somebody.
Yes, I know the guy you mean.
And he was a bit of a weasel, this guy.
He was.
And he used to knock around with sort of page three girls and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
He fancied himself quite a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
And what Chris would do is, Chris would get the day started and all that, and then Chris would go down to the City Golf Club, which was the only 24-hour-a-day drinking club in Fleet Street in those
days.
That's
right,
because of the strange drinking hours. And Chris would spend most of the afternoon in the City Golf Club while John sort of, you know, made sure that all the things that Chris had asked for in the morning were all being done.
Right.
And then they, you know, Chris would come back about 6 o'clock and they'd make a presentation to the editor and this should be the front
but
page.
But sometimes when he made those presentations
it was shocking.
Where he could barely speak,
but
everybody tolerated it.
No, I saw him come into Nick's office once, you know, I didn't go out most days, believe it or not.
Right.
And
well, you couldn't really, could you?
He came in and he said, "Nick," you know, because Sir Nicholas was our editor, "Nick, I wouldn't be doing my job as picture editor unless I told you this is your front page picture."
Yeah.
He pushed across the desk.
And he was often right as well, by the way.
He was, yeah. But when he turned around and left the office, Nick would always say to Craig, who was his sort of, you know, his sort of comfort blanket, he'd say, "You know, Chris, you know, very good of you to bring me the front page picture, but you haven't been doing your job. You've been in the City Golf Club all afternoon, so... thanks for a lot, but you haven't been doing your job," and all that kind of stuff, you know.
There's
but he was a great carrier. He fell asleep once on the loo.
That's
he
right.
wasn't going to the loo. He just needed a rest to sit down. He didn't want to fall asleep in the newsroom. So he went into the loo, went into a cubicle and sat there, and we had to break the door off to get him out about 3 hours later.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing stuff. We've got lots more to tell you about. Loads more characters, but that's enough for episode 15.
Yes.
And we'll be doing, of course, episode 16, same time next week.
Indeed.
No. and off they'd gone to a hotel room. Mm. Now, supposedly, according to the way the story was told to me, they then got themselves involved in a few kind of sex games, you know, things which you might consider to be a little bit kinky.
Yeah. Involved tying people up.
Which involved tying people up. First of all, he tied her up because that was what she'd asked him to do.
Yeah.
And then when that was all done, over and done with, she then said, I'm going to tie you up now. Yeah. And he said, fine.
Mm.
And so she tied him up face down on the bed.
Yeah.
Which was all fine until she then left the room and somebody else came into the room who had completely different ideas and was not, in fact, a woman.
Oh, dear.
If you can understand sort of where this is going.
Oh, my God.
And he was unfortunately assaulted rather badly. And couldn't tell
that's
anyone.
A terrible story.
Well, he couldn't tell anybody about it because of the shame, apart from the else. But he ended up having to somehow get one of his colleagues to come and rescue him.
Oh, God.
Because they just left him there.
Everybody thought, you know, who's this jerk? You know what I mean? And, you know, when somebody called his bluff, you know, he backed down immediately and all that kind of stuff. So, but I became a good friend of his, and we used to socialise a lot at weekends because both our girlfriends knew each other. And he always liked drinking a lot. But the problem was he was in the throes of becoming an alcoholic.
Yeah.
And eventually he did.
Right.
And
there must have been so many people that we knew that became alcoholics.
Cole drank himself to death, and it was tragic. He submitted a bill for his expenses, and it went, you know, 2 pints of bitter,
right.
2 pints of bitter,
yeah.
4 large gin and tonics,
yeah.
2 brandies, 2 Southern Comforts,
yeah.
2 Courvoisier, 1 cheese sandwich.
Yes,
that was his. That was it, and it came up to £111.
Right.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.